Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of SFP Now. Joining me in a few moments, hopefully, will be Raisa, where we'll be going over a few of the past couple of days' news stories. But until she gets on, I'm going to move on anyway with a story that was posted at Sci-Fi Pulse recently. And apparently, the Smithsonian is seeking the help of fans to restore the original Enterprise from the 1966 Star Trek series. Last week, a subspace message was sent out intended for all Star Trek fans from the National Air and Space Museum requesting photographic references to the USS Enterprise. From before 1976. The request comes as a result of the Smithsonian Institute attempting to restore the original model of the starship to its on-air appearance in 1967. It seems as though the original Enterprise model was in fact modified 8 separate times after its initial construction in 1964, and as such, the Smithsonian is asking the fans to please send photographs and any other pertinent reference materials to Star Trek Starship Enterprise at si.edu. So, you know, that's interesting that they changed it so many times, but not really surprising. But there you go. Another story we just posted on the site today is Back in Time, which is a new documentary with regards to Back to the Future, is due to hit in the next couple of days. And it looks like a really interesting film, because it actually reunites the original cast of the film. And basically you have Robert Zemeckis, you have Steven Spielberg, you have Bob Gale, Leia Thompson, Christopher Lloyd, as well as Huey Lewis, James Tolkien, Claudia Wells, and many others, including Michael J. Fox. And basically, it's a documentary about the making of the movie trilogy. Its cultural impact on pop culture as we know it, and everything to do with that. And there's also some nice stories from behind the scenes, like, for example, in the clip that's in the trailer, Michael J. Fox is talking about the royal premiere for the movie and meeting Prince Charles and Lady Diana, and that was sort of like a really nice clip. Anyway, it looks like Raisa's just joined us, so let's bring her on. Hey, Raisa, how
Hello.
You doing?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm in on myself.
Oh, yeah, it's not good when you have to use yourself.
That's life.
I mean for you. not necessarily
no.
Care, but, you know. Anyway, I've just been talking about the Back to the Future documentary that's due out called Back in Time.
Yes, that trailer looked awesome.
It did. I'm just wondering how much input Michael J. Fox actually has in it, because he's in that clip and he's talking in that clip, but there's no reference to him being in the show in the actual press release that they sent me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I found quite interesting and a little
bit
odd. But also on Back to the Future news is the fact that they've actually got him to return for the new Lego Dimensions.
Yes, that looks wonderful too.
Mhm. Well, it's great that I've got him to return for that. I mean, it's all like I've got to admit, you know, Michael J. Fox is all. I've always kind of had a soft spot for him since Marty McFly.
Yes.
And Family Ties and. You know, it's just great that he can continue acting and doing the amount of work that he does, given the Parkinson's disease and all that.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing quite well.
He is. I mean, so like, there was actually I think there was a clip online somewhere, and it was done a few years back, and it's of him
Yes.
playing guitar. He's playing Johnny B. Goode on guitar
Oh, wonderful.
live, and you know he's still playing guitar even though that you know the Parkinson's you know disease is basically. You know, slowing him down a little bit, but in this clip, there was no signs of him slowing down when he was playing guitar, and he was playing it all himself as well.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere actually that if you engage in things like music, it activates different parts of the brain, and it can get around things like Parkinson's.
It, you know, it certainly does. I've got some comic book news here now, and this is there's only 7 days left on this, but if anyone's into comics, they might be interested in this one because there's quite a lot of well-known people involved in it. But there's been a comic book campaign on Kickstarter for a comic called Blood and Oil. It's seeking crowdfunding, and it is actually a sequel to a cyberpunk comic book series that started last year called Metal Made Flesh. Which is basically described as cyberpunk space opera set in the distant future, but has been described as Blade Runner meets Game of Thrones. The
Wow.
storyline is as follows: humanity is being chased to the brink of extinction by an unrelenting foe called the Vuur, and has been forced to take refuge in Tuani. A sprawling city on the black market trading hub, Iquan, Yas. Forced into extreme poverty and treated as the lowest of the low by the planet's inhabitants, humans are forced to do whatever it takes to survive. The comic book series centers on three humans: the cold, merciless cyborg Isobel Weiss, who loses more of her humanity with each passing upgrade; the psychopathic assassin Fayonnette, whose consciousness is trapped in the gradually failing body of a synthetic child; and Caliboss, a spoilt human prince who loses everything when he is mutated into a hideous war machine. The art is coming from the creator Simeon Aston, who basically is doing the art for Blood and Oil. And it will also feature three of the best comic book artists from the UK scene, which include Gary Erskine, who's done Judge Dredd, Dan Dare, Hellblazer, The Authority, The Filth, and Star Wars; Kev Crosley, Judge Dredd, Tomb Raider, ABC Warriors, and a concept artist for Alien vs. Predator and Star Wars; and it introduces Phil Buckingham, Rented to the Dead, whose artwork has actually blown the creators away. Writer Jeremy Briggs is returning to writing and editing duties and will be joined by Emmy Award nominated Mike Garley, who did work on Collider, Killscreen, Dead Roots, and Eponymous, and Samurai Slasher Adventure Time, Wallace and Gromit, and Sidey Tan, who's a good friend of ours. He's written for Starship Troopers. He's done his own comic books, The Indifference Engine, White Knuckle, and the one that I love most, Cantertown. They've got a Kickstarter campaign ongoing, so all you need to do is just type into Kickstarter Blood and Oil. And they have a website which is www.metalmadeflesh.com. And, you know, from what I can see of the artwork and everything that's going into this, it looks like it could be really good.
Yes, it does.
And I kind of like the idea, the notion of Blade Runner and Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that would be a fascinating mashup there.
Anyway, just to let you know, I'm gonna be interviewing hopefully Jeremy. The writer and Simeon, the main artist of this, on Saturday for a future episode of the podcast.
Oh, awesome.
Because of right now, it's sort of like it's looking touch and go about whether they're going to get the funding or not because they're nowhere near meeting their target. But you know, you never know, they might launch another Kickstarter campaign. They don't strike me as the type of people that are going to give up on it if they don't make the money that they need to make right away.
Yeah,
Sort of
no.
thing. Because as you know yourself, we've done a few Kickstarter campaigns this year that haven't made money out the first time out, but have made it on the second time out.
Right.
Anyway, we've got Robin has published a new Marvel roundup, and there's all sorts of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Stories gone up, such as Sky Chloe Bennett. She's going to be fulfilling her destiny as Marvel Comics character and going by the name Daisy Johnson, whose S.H.I.E.L.D. code name is Quake. She'll also have her own superhero costume, which is pictured on the website. And I gotta admit, she looks pretty hot.
She does, and I particularly like that they found a hairstyle for her that's a good middle ground between her original hairstyle and Quake's hairstyle in the comics, because Quake's hairstyle in the comics is extremely short,
Yeah,
and they sort of they
I think they should have just shaved her head and given her a mohawk. But that's me. But basically, this is a lot of stuff that we've kept that they've been talking about all summer. Inhumans is going to be a major part of the third series, which isn't really surprising given how the second series ended.
No.
In a recent interview, executive producer Marisa Tankaran, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right,
Yeah, that's Tantron, yeah.
she said, "Last we left with the image of the fish oil on shelves, that is an indication perhaps there will be more Inhumans popping up all over the place. Our team has to deal with that and figure out who they can help through this process and figure out who's good and who's bad." Okay, and we're also going to have the secret warriors. Tankaran also said it's going to be very small build up to what you see in Secret Warriors. It's very, very nascent stages when we first come into the season. Daisy is the only power person on the team, and Jed Whedon has added it's something that's long term goal of Coulson's Clark Gregg. But right now they're in such an emergency mode, and there are so many things standing in their way. They need a solution to this problem, and they don't have it yet. We'll see that desire, to thing it is potentially it is potentially a problem too, because they don't want to rush into things, so it'll be a slow burn. So, what do you
Yeah.
reckon to all this Inhuman stuff? Are you kind of excited for it?
I'm excited about it as far as it goes, but I'm not looking forward to the degree to which it feeds into Captain America: Civil War. I'm not looking forward to that storyline. I wish that they were generating conflict some other way.
Yeah, because I think what could potentially happen is what happened in season one. It'll be slow burn first half of the season until the story coalesces and crosses over with the release of Civil War.
Yeah.
But
And
maybe
then
they've learned from that.
Yeah, maybe I hope so. And then there's the added thing of I'm just not into internal strife storylines generally. I see enough of that as it is on every other show. And so I think I'm kind of like something else, but that's just me, that's just subjective.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic. We've got some Ant-Man news here at the end of this latest Marvel update. And it says in the mid-credits scene of Ant-Man shows Hank Pym, Michael Douglas, giving Hope Van Dyne her own costume to take up her late mother Janet Van Dyne's mantle as the Wasp. Marvel Studios president and producer Kevin Feige of Age now hints that when we are likely to see this happen, when we are likely to see this happen. He says it's going to be certainly a part of our phase three of the films we've announced in phase three, he said. It is going to be a very important moment in Ant-Man and, spoiler alert, we see that suit for the first time, and her father now is finally giving it to her and realizes that he can't hold her back from what is essentially her destiny, is going to be a very big part one of our upcoming films. Have you seen Ant-Man yet?
I have, and I loved that scene at the end. And I really hope they do a good job of it. I want to see more of Hope, you know, organically built in. I'm afraid that what they may do is overcompensate and give us, you know, a little bit of too much of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
In order to make up for the fact that we had basically nothing. I'm hoping that they find a middle ground so that all the characters get what they need, you know, in subsequent Ant-Man movies.
I'm not really that worried, to be honest. I mean, the thing is, we did get quite a bit of Hope in the first one, but it wasn't as Wasp, obviously. But she kind of played a crucial role in that first film.
I'm thinking more in general of just there's been such a brouhaha about female superheroes in the Marvel films, or lack thereof, that I'm afraid they'll just sort of really overcompensate. I think going to either extreme is just really, really bad. And it seems like all Marvel knows how to do in terms of getting some of these character dynamics is go to extremes. And I'm hoping that they, you know, deal with it with a more nuanced approach.
Mhm. Okay. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, and there's like a few other news stories that have come up that I'm quite keen to talk about. First off, Time After Time, a favourite movie of mine from back in the day. ABC are planning a TV series.
Yes. This will depend on the writing.
Yeah, I think it will also depend on the acting as well. I mean, let's face it, Malcolm McDowell, David Warner, Mary Steenburgen, those actors, it's going to be very hard to find, you know, unknown actors or relatively unknown actors in television land that have the same amount of gravitas and acting chops as those three actors.
Yeah. It's either going to be really, really good or it's going to be dead in three episodes. One of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dead in three. I say dead in about seven. I don't think
they
cancel after three episodes anymore unless it's really, really bad.
Sure.
I mean, the guy behind it, he's, you know, he's done a show called The Following, which I think lasted a season.
No.
Or did that last a while?
It lasted actually, I think, for two.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it got rave reviews for Kevin Bacon's performance level stuff, but the storylines were apparently a bit uneven.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, you know, the reason I said it, I thought it only lasted a season is because it's only just come up here on Amazon here in this country, sort of thing, as one
mm-hmm.
of their free TV series on Prime. And as far as I'm aware, I don't think it actually aired on a conventional TV channel here in the UK, unless it was actually one of the Backwoods ones that they'll watch. Or it didn't seem to get too much hype, you know, despite Kevin Bacon being in the lead.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a bit worried, but I'm also hoping that, you know, they can do it a good service. They're saying that they're basically going to use the 1979 film as a jumping off point. So that tells me that they're either going to retell the 1979 film but set it in a modern day, and then use that story as a jumping off point, or they're going to use the 1979 film as a jumping off point and just set it in the late 70s. But then again,
that
it's time travel.
That might be interesting.
But then again, it's time travel. So, the fact is, H.G. Wells and was it May?
Yeah.
They went back to his apartment in London, supposedly. And Stevenson apparently died, or did he? Could it be another sort of Era Oswald type story where fragments of him were split up all across the timeline?
Well, they've got some options anyway.
They've got lots of options. I'm just hoping that they can do a good job of it and not sully my memory of the film, because I'm quite fond of that film. As I'm sure you are, because it sounds like it's,
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, do you have any other concerns about that, or have I summed it up?
No, I think I don't think I can bring up any more concerns until I actually see what they've given us. So, yeah.
Okay, well, we've got another piece of news, also up your street, Jamie Chung returning to Once Upon a Time as Mulan.
Yes. Yes. That should be awesome.
Yeah, the question being is, will Mulan and Princess Aurora finally get it on, and how will it affect Prince Philip? Will he sort of like conveniently die, or will they conveniently sort of leave him in the plot so they can have a bit of tension there?
Hell, I wouldn't mind if they just did a threesome and called it
Ooh,
a day.
that'd be interesting, but it is an ABC show. I think it's, I
That's
think
true.
basically just having the gay relationship play out on an ABC show is probably progress enough.
Yes.
Not that I'd be against the threesome,
No.
but so like I just don't think they'd get away, get away. But then again, there are some like stranger relationships that happen in real life, so you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm also wondering if, apart from whatever happens with Aurora, I'm wondering if Mulan is going to end up going off with Belle and Merida on their little adventure to try and revive Rumpelstiltskin, because Belle and Merida are going to be doing that.
Yeah, and they're gonna need another kick-ass woman on the team, given that the main character, I forget her name now,
Emma Swan.
Emma Swan's kind of become kind of being possessed by the Dark One, because as she goes
Yes.
further and further down that dark path,
Yeah, yeah.
Her interests are not going to be the same as everyone else's in that group.
No.
So yeah, I think it's a good thing that they're bringing her back, and I think it's absolutely brilliant that they're bringing Red Riding Hood back as well.
Yes. Thank you. Far
Because
too underused.
because I've got a strange fascination with female werewolves. It's kind of making me go round and start sniffing trees.
Oh.
But yeah, I'm kind of like all for it, and it'd be interesting to see what happens. And I'm kind of hoping that this season's a little bit less soapy than the last series.
Yeah, it's gotten progressively more soapy as it's gone on. That's one of the structural issues.
And it's not just that, but Snow White looked pretty heavily pregnant for most of the last series.
Well, that's because Jenny Goodwin was pregnant in real life, so they had no choice.
Yeah, so like it just sounded like she looked really pregnant after she'd had the baby in the series as well.
Oh.
It was just really
Oh, dear.
strange. It's not that I don't, But it'd just
Yeah.
be it'd be good to see it back and see what happens, anyway. And
Yeah.
our last news item is, and I don't think you think I caught this, but Woody Harrelson is to play a character called the Colonel in the new Planet of the Apes movie.
And he's apparently going to be the heavy.
Yeah, the bad guy. He's basically going to be bad to the bone. That's going to be interesting because I don't think I've ever seen Woody Harrelson play the heavy before. You know, I've usually seen him play some like rather gullible characters, or kind of like the unintentional victim. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what happens there. But not just that, I'm just excited to see that they're making a third Apes movie because the first two so far have been brilliant.
Yeah. I
Well, I'm
haven't
not.
actually watched them. I've kind of not been in the mood for apocalyptic stuff generally, or, the world ending stuff generally. But I
Yeah,
will watch them when I am in the mood.
I get where you're coming from, but this is actually really, really good world-ending apocalyptic stuff. It's not like the shit you've been getting on TV. And plus, it's only once every couple of years will it be in a movie.
Yeah,
That's
what I
fair.
may do is once all three are out, I'll probably just binge them all together.
But the first one was great. The second one was fantastic, and it was quite sad at the end because, without spoiling too much, ape and human become friends, and then at the end, ape and human realize that they were now at war. And how could they reconcile the friendship given that that they inevitably are going to wind up on different sides? So he really explored that and really, really dug into the characters and the plight of the characters, which is something that a lot of the post-apocalyptic stuff you get doesn't really do too well. I'm quite looking forward to seeing it and seeing how it plays out. We've got 2 minutes left. Do you have any other news items you want to discuss?
No, except to mention briefly for U.S. viewers only that the Gotham season 2 premiere has been released for the U.S. only through the PlayStation
Cool.
mechanism.
Yeah,
So it's out.
I'm a bit naffed about that because I'm in the UK and I have a PlayStation, and I still haven't seen Powers yet because it's not, I've done a search on the UK PlayStation Network and I can't find it.
Oh, I'm
So
sorry.
it's sort of like all this stuff that's happening with PlayStation Network. I think it must be unique to the US. I know a friend of mine who runs a UK website. He managed to see the pilot episode of it on YouTube and a few subsequent episodes by alternate means. But it's pretty bad that the UK hasn't released Powers yet
That
onto
really
the
does
PlayStation
suck.
Network. It
Yeah.
does, given that like everyone else, I pay my fees every month. Anyway,
Yeah.
that's about all we've got time for this week. I'd like to thank Raisa for heroically joining us via mobile phone.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back again on Friday with an exciting Doctor Who related interview. So until then, we'll see you then. Bye.